Speaking on this program is Brother Tony Lawrence.
There's so much in the Bible that really does need preaching. But when we start looking at the society in which you and I live, we live in a very, very sinful society. And when you take the gospel message and you apply it to people's lives, it does have relevance and it does deal with where we live. In Acts 2 and verse 40, the Apostle Peter said to those people on the day of Pentecost, and with many other words he testified and exhorted them, saying, "Be saved from this perverse generation." If the first generation was perverse, certainly we can say that ours is as well. In fact, sin has become so commonplace in our society that it has almost become expected that people will participate in some sort of sinful behavior. And a person can practice sin so long that sin becomes ingrained into their character. It becomes part of who they are. When Jeremiah wrote his letter, wrote his message from God, in Jeremiah chapter 13 and verse 23, he said, "Can the Ethiopian change his skin, or the leopard its spots? Then may you also do good who are accustomed to do evil." We find people who have made it a practice, made it a part of their custom to do things that are wrong, and they get to the point, as Jeremiah discussed in chapter 6 and verse 15, were they ashamed when they committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed, nor could they blush. When Peter writes in 2 Peter 2 and verse 14, he said, "Having eyes full of adultery, and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls," now here's the important part, "they have their heart," or have a heart, "trained in covetous practices and are accursed children." People can train themselves. They can put themselves into a pattern of life that it allows them to simply think, this is all right. This is normal. This is okay. Yet the Bible tells us that sin is exceedingly sinful. In Romans 7 and verse 13, Paul asks, "Has then what is good become death to me? Certainly not. But sin, that it might appear to be sin, was producing death in me through what is good, so that sin through the commandment might become exceedingly sinful." If I do my job as a gospel preacher, I must allow sin to be seen as sin. Not to allow people to be comfortable in their sin. Not to allow people to think it's okay to do these things, but to address them. And tonight we're going to address one of the sins that has become ingrained into our American culture, and that is dishonesty. And so tonight I'd like for us to look at the status quo, to look at society today and what is going on. Then I'd like for us to look at the scriptures quoted. Let's listen to God as He speaks on this subject. And then to finally look at the sin quenched in our lives. I'd like for you to consider our society in the 21st century. In fact, this past week in trying to do preparation for this, I wanted to look and see, does anyone else see that this is a problem? And there was a book written called The Post-Truth Error. And it was written by Ralph Keyes. And it has, you can read a lot of the book. It's available for a person to read freely on the Internet. And he posts, and you start looking and saying, you know what? I see dishonesty here. I see dishonesty there. And he deals with it as it comes from so many different aspects. And then there's another one written by David Callahan called The Cheating Culture, Why More Americans Are Doing Wrong to Get Ahead. Now, if you go to Amazon.com where this was available, and you read the comments that are below it, you start saying, I can't believe this many people are justifying They're being dishonest in this society. But I'd like to go a little bit further. I'd like to be a little more specific. We have academic dishonesty. That is, those people who claim something is their own, but when in reality it is not. For instance, I don't know if you realize that a lot of children are required, students are required to write term papers. And there is a phrase that refers to this dishonesty, and it's called plagiarism, where you take something that someone else put out and you claim it as if it is your own. It didn't take long to search for term papers on the internet, termpapersmonthly.com. And if a student wants to get a term paper, you can have it. You can type in what you're looking for. If I need a term paper, for instance, on the composer Brahms, or I need a term paper maybe, for instance, on some application of some principle, you can find it there. They even talk about the popular ones. But then what got me was I noticed that a lot of students have gotten in trouble because they bought a term paper that everybody else has already bought and they've been found out. So there's another one called Research Papers Online. And what it says, we have the lowest prices, the highest quality, and we offer instant delivery to your browser. Papers starting at $4.95 per page. Don't take a chance with another company. Our research papers are new, written by professional English-speaking writers, and have never been circulated before. And I thought, why would I believe you? If you're dishonest enough to tell us you're going to provide term papers for people that have never been read before, why would you not go ahead and just lie about that too? Do you understand that academic honesty today, that many, many students in colleges and universities all around the country are saying, why should I stay up and study and read when someone else can write this paper for me and I can get it for $4.95 a page? And they pass it off with their name and are involved in plagiarism. But you might say, well, that's the students, we expect it. But do you realize that it's also existing among the teachers as well? There are many who are claiming academic degrees that they have not attained, and some of them have lost their job. Here is the website from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I'll get that in a minute. And their dean of admissions there, his name is Marilee Jones, or was. She was a person considered to be one of the leaders among her peers. But yet, on April the 7th in 2007, it was revealed that the MIT Dean of Admission had to resign because she said that she had degrees from several universities that she never attended. We're talking about prestigious people who are standing up and saying, I went to this school and I attained this degree and I accomplished this, when in reality they did not. Would you say that academically our society today is riddled with dishonesty? I don't think there's any doubt about that. But what about politicians? I thought there's just really, there's no end to this. How many could forget Mr. Clinton's favorite lie when he stood up and said, I didn't do this? Or just recently, I noticed that there were several politicians that were saying, this one is doing this, no, this one's doing that, this one's lying, that one's lying. You know what you come away with is a feeling that there's no one of them that's honest. Lying and cheating have become an art form. How can a person craft their lie to where it becomes believable? And in fact, on our reality TV shows, it's become the thing to be able to outwit someone else, to be able to lie to them, to be able to deceive them. Or what about numerous companies that have been started with a premise to deceive and cheat people? I don't know if you realize it, but businesses generally once a year will receive a little envelope from a company that looks like the Yellow Pages. And it will say that your bill for this advertisement is maybe $50, maybe $100. And then down at the very small print at the bottom saying, this is not a bill. This is a solicitation for you to advertise with us. It's not the Yellow Pages. It's some listing somewhere, and I'm sure they probably list somewhere. But what they're doing, the premise of it is to deceive you so that you'll send them money. And how many people have been scammed by the internet emails saying that someone in Nigeria's great uncle died and left $10 million, and if you'll just send them your bank account number, they'll be more than glad to put that money in your bank account for you. You see, dishonesty has become the status quo. But now, what's important is not what our society is doing, but how God reacts to it. And in God's eyes, honesty is found in three main areas. If you survey the Bible, you will find God talking about honesty in conversation, what we say. Honesty in commerce, how we deal with other people in business. And then in our character of who we are. For just a moment, let me explore these areas with you. Let's think about what you and I say. If I go to the book of Proverbs, there are a number of passages that address this, and I can't explore all of them, but let me just take a couple of them. In chapter 12, verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. When people lie, God looks at that and says, that's wrong. I consider that an abomination. But now I delight in the person who will tell the truth. Perhaps there's no clearer passage in the whole Bible than is found in Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to Him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. Do you notice that two of them, of the seven, have relation to one another? There's the lying tongue and the false witness who speaks lies. They are distinct, and yet at the same time, deceit is the heart of both of them. These are things the Lord hates. These are things that are an abomination to Him. As I go further and listen to David in the Psalms in chapter 59 and verse 12, David says, for the sin of their mouth and the words of their lips, let them be even taken in their pride, and for the cursing and the lying which they speak. David had deceitful people all around him, and he was amazed at these people, how that they could look at him and lie to him directly. John 8 and verse 44. This is one of those exceptional passages where our Lord is trying to talk to people about being free. John 8 and verse 32, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Truth will make you free. But these people did not respond as the Lord expected or as the Lord wished. Jesus said, you are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. Because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Jesus said the devil is a liar and the devil is the father of liars. We all know where that will lead. When you get to the very end of the book of Revelation, to the next to the last chapter, and John has been given the privilege of peering into paradise and looking into eternity and all the blessings that will be a part of it. And he wants us to understand there are parts of eternity that will not have wickedness there. And he says, but the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, fornicators, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Lying will cause a person to go into eternal torment. But now, it's not just what we say, but it's what we do. There's a lot of dishonesty that takes place when people enter into business. Let me carry you to the Old Testament. The book of Leviticus revealed God's legal system, if you will, for the nation of Israel. And he said to them in chapter 19, verses 35 and 36, you shall do no injustice in judgment, in measurement of length, weight, or volume. You shall have honest scales, honest weight, honest ephah, and an honest hin. I am the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I want you to notice carefully in verse 35, length, weight, and volume. If you sell an 8-foot long tube of four, it ought to be every bit of 8-foot long. Your length should be exact. In weight, the amount of what something weighs. And then he says in volume, if you sell a quarter of something or a gallon of it, and their measurements was the ephah and the hin, he said, you need to make sure you've got an honest one. But see, I go to Deuteronomy chapter 25, and I understand what he means by this because he's a little more explicit. You shall not have in your bag differing weights, a heavy and a light. You shall not have in your house differing measures, a large and a small. You shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord your God has given you. For all who do such things, all who behave unrighteously, are an abomination to the Lord your God. You don't have to have a PhD in rocket science to understand that. When he says you can't have two sets of weights, you can't have two sets of measurements. Now, some of you might remember years ago when there were these scales. I remember as a boy because of the cotton fields in Alabama. And I remember these scales that would have little hooks on them, little peas, and that's the way you would measure the weight of cotton. What if someone had one that was just a little bit light and one had one was a little bit heavy? And it shows that a person has more weight than they do or less weight. He says, if you do that, that's an abomination to the Lord. In Proverbs 16, verse 11, and chapter 11, and verse 1, honest weights and scales are the Lord's. All weights in His bags are His work. Verse 11, chapter 11, verse 1, dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. You start noticing a repeating phrase throughout the Old Testament. Abomination, abomination, abomination. That is exactly the same word the Lord used with regards to men having homosexual relationship with men. That's exactly the same terminology He used for a man having relations with a beast. It's an abomination to the Lord. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8, he's talking about the lawsuits that had developed in the church at Corinth. And he says, now therefore it is already an utter failure among you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept the wrong? Why do you not rather let yourself be cheated? No, you yourselves do wrong and cheat, and you do these things to your brethren. He said, you are allowing yourself to be dishonest, not only with your dealings of the world, which is bad enough, but even you do this to your brethren. You cheat your brethren. certainly people have got to understand God sees this. Proverbs 20, verse 14. Here's a buyer. And he says, it's good for nothing. Good for nothing, cries the buyer. But when he's gone away, he boasts. Look what I've done. You're trying to sell this person something. Oh, no, no, no. It's not good. It's got this problem. It's got that problem. I don't think I need it. You just, it's not worth much. Okay, I'll sell it to you. Oh, look what I got. Look at the deal that I got from him. That's not being honest. Not being honest. Now, the third part is character. You see, reputation is what people think we are, but character is what we really are. What we are in our heart. This is what you yourself know about yourself. This is what God knows about you. And the Bible talks about us in our heart. In Psalms 15 and verse 2, he's asked the question, who can dwell in God's holy hill? Who is the person that God will accept? And he says, he who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. A person who's not dishonest with himself. Who's not got this idea that, let's see how I can twist this, fashion this, shape this so that it sounds all right when in reality it's not. In Psalms 24, verse 4, he who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol nor sworn deceitfully. He's not holding something back. He's not a person who says, okay, what I'm saying may be technically accurate, but I know I'm trying to deceive you. Matthew 15, verses 7 and 8, Jesus dealt with this among religious people. He said, hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, this people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. There are some people who sing, oh, how I love Jesus. Don't love him. Some people sing, blessed be the tie that binds our hearts together in love. And then are unwilling to be bound together with those people. Now, let me carry to the last part. Because I dare say that you had a pretty good idea about what was involved in this society's sinful behavior. I dare say most of you pretty well knew, you may not have known where it was located, but you knew what the Scriptures taught about honesty and integrity of heart. But now, what about Christians eliminating this from their lives? In Colossians 3 and verse 9, the Apostle Paul has talked about a change of clothing that takes place when one becomes a Christian. You take off and then you put on. And in talking about what a person takes off, he says, do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds. When I become a Christian, I take off that dirty, sinful lifestyle that I have practiced in my past, and I now put on the clean, the pure, the holy actions of a Christian. Or when Paul wrote Ephesians 4, verse 25, he says, therefore, putting away all lying, let each of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We all ought to speak the truth. In the book of Numbers, chapter 30, verse 2, we read, if a man makes an oath to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself to some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. You see, when I become a Christian, I am to be the kind of person that says, my word is my bond. That if I tell you I will do something, I ought to do it. If I cannot do it, then I owe you an apology. And I owe you a request for forgiveness for not completing what I said I would do. In Psalms 15 and verse 4, here's a passage which in my judgment deserves to be studied and considered. he's talking about this man who can dwell with God on his holy hill. He says, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. Now here's the part. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change. Here's a man who makes a promise, but he realizes, if I do what I said I will do, it's going to hurt me. Yes, it will. But you keep your word. And honesty and integrity ought to be your bond. And so we should be away with all deception. Partial truth is not the truth. And I don't know. I think this is perhaps where we sometimes want to justify our behavior. But I want to be very clear about this point. Partial truth is not the truth. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37, let me set this passage up to you before we read it. Jesus had said in Matthew 5, verse 20, I say, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. If you don't have a better life than they do, you can't go to heaven. So he says again, you have heard it said of old, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King, nor swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Now, if I did not have a background behind this, I might think that the Lord was just simply saying, these people were not to swear at all. But you see, I do have another passage of Scripture. The passage of Scripture that I have is found in Matthew 23. And it explains what's going on here. Because when I go there, woe to you blind guides who say whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he's obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gift on it is obliged to perform it. Fools and blinds, which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it and all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by him, by it and him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits on it. What I learn is that these people had a real cute little system of being deceptive. They would say, now, I'll swear to you by the temple. And then they'd say, but you don't have to do it because you didn't swear by the gold of the temple. Do you understand what was going on? People had a neat little system where they could say, I can lie to you, I can deceive you, and you can believe I'm telling you the truth, and I can affirm it with an oath. But they were making that oath into something less than honesty. I can see this applied in the life of Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12 with regards to Abimelech, in Genesis chapter 20 with Pharaoh, Abraham said, Sarah is my sister. Now you say, well, he told the truth. She was his sister. Sarah was Abraham's half-sister. But what Abraham did was, in saying that, was led people to believe, she's not my wife. The partial truth is not the truth at all. Because it is intent to deceive. And those of us who are Christians can't be a part of that. And that's what Jesus was saying in Matthew chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 23. Whatever is more than these is from the evil one. When you get to the point where you have to start affirming everything by what you say with an oath, then you have just illustrated in your life that you have dishonesty in your character. One may not be able to stop the world of the sin of dishonesty. But that does not mean that I have to participate myself. In fact, as a Christian, I have to say no. I'm going to be different. to use the King James translation, a peculiar people. We deal with a God who does not lie, and for that I am thankful. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 2, he says, "In hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, before time began." Just imagine if you were dealing with a God that was dishonest. Imagine if you were dealing with a God who didn't tell you the truth. But you're not. You're dealing with a perfectly true and honest God. And that's what He wants us to be. Honest and true as well. You'll get your songbooks out and turn to the song of invitation. Will you be honest with yourself tonight and ask the question, am I in a right relationship with the Lord? Have I become a Christian? Have I been baptized for the remission of my sins? If not, why not take care of that tonight?